Welcome to the Dispatch Podcast. I'm David Drucker, and thanks for joining us for our conversation with Henry Barber. Barber is the nephew of legendary former Republican National Committee Chairman Haley Barber and an elected member of the RNC from Mississippi. We invited him onto the Dispatch Podcast to talk about a resolution he recently proposed that is controversial in some GOP circles, that if voted on and approved by the committee, would prohibit the National Party from spending money to cover Donald Trump's massive legal bills, which are related, of course, to his indictment in four criminal cases. Now, as you'll learn in a moment from our discussion, Barber typically shies away from the media spotlight. So we jumped at the chance to have him on the Dispatch Podcast to discuss his resolution, the leadership changes coming to the RNC spurred by Trump, who, by the way, is on his way to becoming the party's presumptive presidential nominee, and the unfolding general election campaign against President Joe Biden. And now, Henry Barber. Henry Barber, the Republican National Committee man from Mississippi. Thanks so much for joining us on the Dispatch Podcast.
David, thank you, man. Glad to be with you live from Oxford, Mississippi.
Yeah, this is fun. You're headed to Houston in a couple of days, if I'm not mistaken, for an RNC spring training turned business meeting. And we'll get to that in a minute. I have a lot of questions about what you have been doing with resolutions you have proposed that have to do with how the RNC spends its money, how the RNC operates prior to a Republican winning enough delegates to be the official presumptive nominee. Obviously, a lot of these things relate to Donald Trump, who is the likely nominee and is going to get quite close to becoming the presumptive nominee, probably later today. We are recording on Tuesday, March 5th, which is Super Tuesday. A lot of primaries, so there's going to be a lot of movement. But before I get to that, you know, I think a lot of people might wonder, because they're not nerds like us, I introduced you as the Republican National Committee man from Mississippi. So explain to us a little bit about what that means. You've been at this for quite a while. What does it mean that you're the RNC committee man from Mississippi? What is it that you do?
Well, so David, there are 168 members of the RNC, three from each state and territory of the United States. And there's a chair, a state chair. There's a committee woman and a committee man, and I had been on the committee going back to 05, so middle of George W. Bush days, and actually worked at the RNC in the 90s prior to that. But a committee man, everybody does it a little differently. Some of them are more focused on raising money. Some of them, like me, are more of an operative and involved in campaigns and, you know, working with different candidates on how to win, working with our state chair on message and just organization, turnout, just the blocking and tackling of winning elections.
And I want to explain to people, the reason I'm referring to you as the committee man is not just because, well, you're a man and you're on the committee. By rule, each state, in terms of RNC membership, must have one woman and one man in addition to whoever the chairman is of whichever gender. And so that's designated. And we'll get to this in a minute. And I didn't even realize this, and I've covered you guys a long time. All right, so that's going to be relevant to our discussion in a minute. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and it's kind of been a hobby horse of mine, but I think people also wonder, you know, especially given our volatile politics over the past few years. And by the way, I get asked these questions about the Democratic National Committee as well. But I'll often get asked, you know, why doesn't the Republican Party stop candidate X from running in their primary or from being the nominee? Or why doesn't candidate X, or why doesn't the Republican National Committee, wasn't the party, you know, do this or do that? I mean, look, the Republican National Committee, first of all, I want you to speak to this, but we don't live in an era anymore where the RNC or the DNC are smoke-filled rooms, to use the cliche, and the party has its own separate power base aside really from elected officials, right? I mean, you guys, you raise money, you run voter turnout operations, you support the policies and the messages issued by the elected officials or supported by the elected officials, meaning elected Republicans. It may vary from state to state. In Vermont, if you're going to win statewide, you probably need to be a moderate Republican. In Mississippi, where you're from, if you're going to run statewide and get elected, you probably need to be a conservative, a more ardent Republican. Talk about what the RNC does and does not do, the power it has and doesn't have.
Well, I will say certainly political parties don't have the power and control that they had 30, 40 years ago. There's no question that that's changed with campaign finance laws and all these independent third party super PAC type groups. They have a lot of influence. And primaries have changed that. As states have moved to primaries, it's really the voters that decide who's going to be the nominee, whether it's the presidency or Senate races or even gubernatorial races. You know, we have these primaries. And that's been a change over the last several decades. The RNC is more like the utility provider. You know, we do the basic infrastructure of campaigns. We make sure that we have good data. There's a good list. We know who that we need to talk to win the election and turn out. And the RNC certainly raises lots of money for organizational efforts out in the field. And but the RNC doesn't do a lot of the messaging. Typically, you know, the candidates, the members of Congress, you know, lead on that. And the RNC reinforces that. And of course, the RNC, the big job it has is to host the convention every 4 years that nominates the president and the vice president nominee of the Republican Party. That's the big job that the RNC has. We've been doing that since 1856, going back a few years. And so we have a lot of longstanding rules and mission, but our core mission, our one mission is to help make sure that Republicans win elections. That's really the only job we have. Everything else is kind of noise.
Okay, let's get to your resolutions. I want to pick up on some of that stuff in a little bit, but let's get to your resolutions. A couple things. You know, I've known you for a long time. For people that don't know Henry Barber, as he described himself, more of an operative, also a background operative, not always out front, not always looking, not always with his name in the news, but you proposed recently a couple of resolutions that, and I'll let you correct me on this if things have changed since we last talked, but I know one, at least, you're still hoping to receive a vote on in Houston if you can generate the requisite support, which would be to make it an RNC rule that no candidate for office. And let me know if this applies to incumbents as well. It's a question I had. Would the RNC would not be permitted or it would be prohibited from covering legal costs for that candidate or anything related to their personal private business? Where are you with that? Tell us a little bit about that resolution and whether or not you think you might get to a point, you know, by later this week where you're going to be able to at least force members to vote on it.
Yeah, so a small group of us on the RNC members, decided we wanted to bring forth a resolution that would make it plain that the RNC is to spend its resources, its money, on winning elections and not spending any RNC financial resources for the legal bills of any political candidate. Now, I will say we were thinking of Donald Trump. He's got all these legal bills. And the RNC actually a couple of years ago spent about $1.6 million of President Trump's legal bills. I think it was a bad precedent. And there has been talk recently from Trump world that, well, there are RNC donors and they want to pay his legal bills. And I don't think that's a good idea, and it certainly conflicts with the RNC's core mission. Our core mission, again, winning elections. That's our only job. And so we felt it was important as these voices were coming about saying, yeah, we should have the RNC help pay these legal bills of of the former president. And we felt, that's not a good idea. It's a bad precedent. And so that's why we offered that specific resolution dealing with legal bills.
Now, at last count, you had enough support from 8 of the 10 states you need to bring this up at the meeting. What's your progress?
Our progress is really gone well. We're now down to 7. It's tough. And in fact, with this being according to the RNC rules, if it's a specially called meeting, you can submit the co-sponsors of a resolution 3 days prior to the meeting. So for us, that's today, Tuesday. And honestly, David, I'm not optimistic that we're going to get there. I've got, as I said, 7 states where we have 2 of the 3 RNC members. And I've got a bunch of states where I have 1 person that is supportive of it. But I'm not optimistic. Now, I will say the Trump campaign, I don't think is crazy about a resolution, but I give him credit. Chris LaCivita, who is helping run the Trump campaign, has said publicly that, we are not going to take RNC dollars and use them for former President Trump's legal bills. So we welcome that, but I have stated that, look, I wish LaCivita and the Trump team would join us in supporting this resolution for a few reasons. It will memorialize it. It will make it, it will give RNC donors and prospective donors more confidence that their dollars that they give to the RNC will actually be used for our core mission, winning elections, and not used for legal bills, which really has nothing to do with whether we're going to win in November or not. And then it can be, I think, misleading for the RNC to use political money that we receive from donors for that purpose. When somebody gets a solicitation, typically they're going to say, hey, we need to win back the White House, get the country back on track. But if you would take their $30 that they send you a month and you use it to pay off somebody's legal bills, I don't think that's right. It's not consistent with our core message. And that's why we've been focused on this. But however it turns out, whether we get a vote on Friday or not, I think we did the right thing, emphasizing the RNC's core mission. And I am appreciative of Chris LaCivita, who's a heck of an operative, saying that, they don't anticipate, well, he just said they won't use RNC dollars for that purpose. If there are donors that want to help President Trump's legal bills, there are other ways to do that.
Now, look, on the one hand, I want to ask the question this way. Why so much resistance to this proposal when we're not just talking about one little lawsuit, maybe some amount of money in legal bills, $25,000, $50,000, even, $500,000. I mean, the former president has spent tens of millions of dollars of his donors' money, I should add, but tens of billions of dollars in legal bills. And this is an issue with his 4 criminal cases, 91 indictments, and it's still ongoing. Why so much resistance when you guys are trying to win back the Senate, preserve a narrow House majority, win back the White House? Why wouldn't people want to ensure that the money is not going to go to legal bills rather than voter turnout, advertising, and all of the things that involve electing candidates, including the likely nominee, Donald Trump?
I'll tell you, David, the response that I've gotten from the resolution, both from RNC members and, just friends of mine and, elected officials, has been essentially 100% positive. I will say I got one negative yesterday. Somebody wasn't too pleased about it. Because people get it, they get what our job is. Our job is pretty simple. We got to win elections. And this is inconsistent with that. And, frankly, it's President Trump's legal bills. It's not the RNC's legal bills. If the RNC has legal bills, we got to pay them. If President Trump has legal bills, he needs to pay them. And he was able to raise, use $50 million last year from one of his super PACs to help pay his legal bills. And that, look, that's their entity. They can do that. I think they have a GoFundMe. Yeah. But again, RNC, this is just not.
But they don't want to make them mad, right? I mean, this comes down to RNC. I don't mean to interrupt, but this comes down to RNC members who are loyal to President Trump. But that's fine. But they don't want to do anything that looks as though they are being critical of him, that they don't trust, right? I mean, isn't that what this comes down to? Or do you think they want to preserve the option that if necessary, the RNC can step in and help him cover this?
I think it has a lot to do with just loyalty to Trump. Trump is just, you know, Trump is a different politician. I mean, he has incredible loyalty with his voters. And he doesn't usually get too excited if somebody disagrees with him. And so I think that's why a lot of RNC members are kind of leaving this alone. And it's a small group of us that are talking about this. But like I said, I think it's important that we stand up for longstanding principles of the institution of the RNC. This sets a bad precedent. But at the same time, David, it's really important for the RNC to keep its eyes focused on the prize, which is we got to win the White House. We got to take back the Senate, which where we have a great opportunity. And we have really good candidates that we've recruited. We got to hold the House. We need to win some governorships and state legislative races. So we've got to stay focused on that. And, you know, today is Super Tuesday. We kind of have a sense probably how it's going to go today between Nikki Haley and former President Trump. And so we are now shifting from the primary to the general. And I think it's time to, you know, think about that big picture of how we do that effectively to make sure that we win in November, to make sure that Joe Biden has to move out of the White House come January of next year.
And we'll take a quick break to hear from Tax Network USA. Do you owe back taxes? Pandemic relief is now over. Along with hiring thousands of new agents and field officers, the IRS has kicked off 2024 by sending over 5 million pay-up letters to those who have unfiled tax returns or balances owed. Don't waive your rights and speak with them on your own. They are not your friends. Tax Network USA, a trusted tax relief firm, has saved over $1 billion in back taxes for their clients, and they can help you secure the best possible deal. Whether you owe $10,000 or $10 million, they can help you. Whether it's business or personal taxes, even if you have the means to pay or you are on a fixed income, they can help financially resolve your tax burdens once and for all. Call 1-800-245-6000 for a private, free consultation or visit tnusa.com/dispatch. And we'll take a quick break to hear from Aura. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. And I'll tell you, not only have I given this picture frame to all the moms in my life, but I'm an only child, and it's been really fun to see my friends with siblings give this frame to their moms, and it turned into a passive-aggressive war to see which siblings can upload more pictures of their children. The Aura app is so easy. You can sit there at the end of the day while you're watching TV and just upload a couple pictures from the day and really show your brother-in-law who's boss. From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, and even the friends in your life, every mom loves an Aura frame. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things, Aura frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code DISPATCH at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Just to ask the question from a different vantage point, a lot of Republicans feel like these lawsuits and these indictments against the former president are politically motivated, that they wouldn't be happening if he wasn't running for president because they think this is the way they can beat him. And you look at the polling and Trump's led Biden pretty consistently in polls since September. We just had a fresh batch of polls out over the weekend in advance of Super Tuesday, shows him gaining with key constituencies and just beating Biden in swing states, nationally, et cetera. So why shouldn't the RNC help him out with these legal bills if necessary, given that this is all about politics? This is what a lot of Republicans would ask.
Sure. I don't think there's any question that a lot of these have to do with politics, and they're attacking President Trump because these courts, these attorneys general, they don't like Donald Trump and they want to damage him. And so I get that. And I get that there is a political angle to it, but still, the RNC's got to spend its money on winning elections. And while it is unfortunate, let's say this New York case that he was trying to get President Trump to pay $350 million in damages when there's no victim, there's nobody that got hurt. The banks that loaned him the money all made money. So it is ridiculous. And I think in a lot of respects, it really helped him about a year ago take control of the Republican primary, because Republican voters who were loyal to him began to rally around him, some of whom had kind of moved over towards DeSantis. But still, I don't think it's what the RNC should be spending its money on. We do have to make sure, though, that we're doing the things to make sure that President Trump wins in November. And I will say, for me, look, I don't agree with President Trump on everything. Most people don't agree with anybody on everything. But that said, I certainly, as we move from primary to general, and President Trump becomes a presumptive nominee here in just a matter of a couple of weeks, I will be supporting President Trump, even though I haven't supported him in the primary, because we got to get Joe Biden out of the White House. And I would urge and encourage Republican voters who maybe voted for DeSantis or Nikki Haley or whoever to really come to terms with, this is going to be a race really decided between, do you want Donald Trump? Do you want Joe Biden? And what are the core policy differences that a Trump administration with a Republican Senate, a Republican House, what are the things that it can accomplish versus the direction that Joe Biden has been taking the country? And I think, when it comes to crime, comes to border, comes to national security, comes to inflation, there's no question that a Republican administration led by Donald Trump with a Republican Senate and House will just do worlds better than what we have gone through the last few years. And let me just say, there's a Harvard Harris poll that just came out about a week ago, David. 82% of all Americans say, quote, we need a new president. 82%. There's a huge political opportunity for the Republican Party.
Sure. Now, we also have seen polls that show near that amount don't want to see a rematch between Biden and Trump. And I've interviewed supporters of President Trump. I think you just mentioned a lot of the reasons why his voters support him. I've also interviewed quite a few voters who supported Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, but lately Nikki Haley, the former South Carolina governor. And they have told me that they don't like Trump because they don't like the way he acts. They were really disappointed with his behavior post 2020 election, not to mention January 6th, but that larger than that, even if it gets larger than that, they don't think he's a fiscal conservative. They see spending going up. They saw spending go up under his watch. He doesn't want to touch a lot of the major drivers of government spending, entitlement programs. He seems to have this ongoing bromance with Vladimir Putin. He plays footsie with dictators. He threatens to pull the U.S. out of NATO or not defend our allies. In other words, all of the things they liked about Ronald Reagan, who was a populist in his own way, they don't see out of Trump, and they don't want to vote for Joe Biden because they don't think he's a fiscal conservative. They don't like his national security policies. I could go on, but they don't feel like Trump is the kind of Republican that is why they have been voting Republican all these years. So doesn't that present a problem for the party? But what do you tell those voters? Just that, well, anything's better than Biden? Or what's the case there?
Well, certainly, as I said before, it's going to come down to binary decision. You're going to have to decide, Am I going to vote with Donald Trump or am I going to stay with Joe Biden? And I think that's where people have to look at the various issues that are fundamental and they care about. Are we going to have a secure border? Are we going to address the immigration system? Are we going to pay more or less in taxes? I think if you look at the 4 years when President Trump was president, just immensely more successful from an economic and national security standpoint than the 4 years or three plus years with Joe Biden. Like I said earlier, there are things that I disagree with President Trump on, some very strongly, you know, particularly post 2020 election and January 6th. But ultimately, it comes down to that difference. And I think one of the keys for President Trump to win the general, first, he needs to help secure the Republican base. And some of this may not be necessarily consistent with his DNA, but he needs to pick up the phone after Super Tuesday, call Nikki Haley, call Ron DeSantis and say, look, this was a tough primary. I appreciate that y'all ran. I need your help. And we've got too much on the line to leave Joe Biden in the White House. It's just beyond him. We've got to turn this around. We've got to win the White House. We got to win the Senate. Let's hold the House. But Nikki, I can't do it without you. One of the reasons I appointed you ambassador to the United Nations is you're tough and smart, strong. And I know I've said some things, but can we put that behind us? Can y'all help me? And I think in the same way that he talks to them, he needs to talk to Republican primary voters like me who aren't voting with him in the primary. He's got to make these Republican, traditional Republican voters feel welcome, feel included. Unlike the comments he made, say, after New Hampshire, when he said, hey, any Nikki Haley donors, you know, can't be in my political MAGA club. He's got to shift from that. He's got to shift to a general election mode where he is growing. Politics is a lot about math and in real complicated math. We want to add, not subtract. The politics of addition opposed to the politics of division. And so you secure the base and then begin to think about, well, who are those traditional Republican voters that we did not get in 2020? Many of them who live in suburbia, many of them college educated, a lot of them female voters in places like the suburbs of Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Phoenix. He's got to reach out to them and he needs to talk to them about issues that unite us, not the divisive stuff. And again, I think crime, national security, the economy, inflation, the border, those are issues that I think for the most part, most Americans care about and President Trump can connect with them.
I've never asked you this. Maybe it's out there publicly, but for the record, who have you been supporting in the Republican primary?
Well, I didn't support anybody until President Trump made the comment about anybody that gives money to Nikki Haley. You can't be in my club. That's the day I sent $500 through WinRed to Nikki Haley because I just like this is obnoxious and it's not right. And of course I support Nikki for lots of the reasons that you talked about before. About her being a traditional conservative Republican. But that said, as we move to the general election, I'm going to support our nominee because we got to get Joe Biden out of the White House. I agree with the 82% of Americans who say we need a new president.
All right, let's talk again about the RNC. And the other resolution that you had proposed was one that would sort of reinforce existing rules, which is the committee's neutral until there's a presumptive nominee. Again, correct me on the technicalities if I'm wrong. Given that Trump has basically swept the primaries and caucuses so far, and that's, you know, things could change after you and I are done talking, but that's kind of what we expect on Super Tuesday. Is that proposal now something that's unnecessary? Is it fine for President Trump, former President Trump, to be treated at this point, at some point this week, as the presumptive nominee? I mean, he's acting like it anyway. He's about to take over the committee prior to securing the 1,215 delegates to the convention that he needs to be the presumptive nominee. But where are you and other people that were concerned about RNC neutrality on this particular proposal?
Yeah, thank you, David. We did offer a second resolution to the committee, to RNC members, that emphasized our rules, which is we have to be neutral in a primary. And we continue to still be in a primary today. Now, we'll see. I mean, Nikki Haley may decide to stay in the race. She may decide to get out. But if she gets out, then obviously President Trump doesn't have to reach the 1,215 delegates to be the presumptive nominee. But the other way for him to, you know, to be the presumptive nominee if she doesn't get out is to get those number of delegates. And he's going to get those here in the next couple of weeks. It's just that's the reality of what's happening. So
it's math.
It's math. That's right. And he's winning. And that's the way it is. And the voters are deciding. And so President Trump, as he gets to that point, it just kind of became obsolete for those of us who presented that resolution and who wanted to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute. We can't go out and just declare President Trump the presumptive nominee or that the primary is over, because really voters get to decide that. And they are deciding it. But we've decided this ship has sailed. And so we've really dropped that resolution and we've just focused on the legal bill resolution, David.
Okay. Having said that, is it counterproductive for the president to push out? And that's what he did. And I understand the niceties. But, you know, Ron McDaniel was chairman because after he became president and presidents control the Republican National Committee, same on the Democratic side of the Democratic National Committee, Ron McDaniel's who he wanted. And so the 168 voting members of the RNC respected his wishes and voted her in. She existed this long in part because he wanted her to continue to exist. Yes, he had all of your support, but she had all of your support, but he remained an influential voice even after he lost the presidency. We're like, what, 8-9 months from an election, and he pushes her out to move in somebody who's otherwise, I'm sure, very capable, Michael Whatley, chairman of the North Carolina Party, also chief counsel at the RNC. And this has been a bit controversial, Laura Trump, his daughter-in-law. And I'm just wondering how, you know, as somebody who has worked at the committee for almost 20 years, and I think, you know, I say worked, you don't get paid, you don't get your travel paid. Nobody has to feel sorry for you, but I think people should know. You're traveling to Houston this week. This is not a paid junket. This comes out of your pocket. All of the extra work you do as an RNC member, I'm sure there are benefits. You're not drawing a salary. But so Trump decides to fire Ronna McDaniel, and I'm sure you guys will vote in Michael Whatley. Tell me if you don't think that'll happen. Tell me if you think he'll have token opposition. But what about this sort of wholesale takeover of the committee 8 months before an election when, unless there's something we're not aware of, there wasn't some sort of egregious mismanagement or graft going on?
Yeah, so the reality is, whether Romney, McCain, George W. Bush, when they become the presumptive nominee, they typically, almost always, they're going to send in their staff to help run the building. And, you know, their fingers are going to be on every decision that's made at the RNC. And so that's the normal thing. So Chris LaCivita is going to come over and manage the day-to-day operations of the RNC. That's a
By the way, that's the normal part of this.
The normal part.
He's a very good operative.
Yeah. So the unusual part of this, and it's the first time this has happened since Eisenhower, that we've pushed out an RNC chair in a presidential election year. And so there's certain risk with that. It's certainly a distraction. But the President Trump certainly has the political power and influence on the RNC to do whatever he wants. And that's apparent with him pushing her out and sort of got pushed out with her is Drew McKissick, the co-chair, and his two candidates for those jobs are Michael Whiteley, the North Carolina Republican Party chairman, who's a good state chairman, and then Laura Trump, wife of his son Eric, and she's newer to this, and so she'll have some learning curve. I think she could be a really effective fundraiser. She just picks up the phone. You figure anybody's going to take her call, so just make the ask. And I hope she really focuses on that. We probably need to raise $250 million this year, David, to really compete.
I want to ask you about that, but isn't that weird to have a nominee put a family member in? I mean, that's got to make some people uncomfortable, or maybe it doesn't, because maybe because of the kind of support Trump has and the involvement that his family has had in his political wanted to say enterprise, but it sounds like a pejorative, in his political campaigns, that it's just, it's what happens. Or are people quietly wondering if that means that elements of the RNC's mission are going to suffer? Because even though Chris LaCivita has said, we're not using any of the RNC's money for the former president's legal bills, that when push comes to shove, of course, the presidential nominee is always important, but it's going to be particularly important because there's a familial loyalty there, right? I mean, that's why people always get uncomfortable when a president hires a family member or an elected official has a relative who's a lobbyist. I mean, I've seen big stories written about members of Congress who hire friends and family to work on their little campaigns. And here we have the National Party with its official number two figure being the president's daughter-in-law. Are people quietly weird about that? Or are they like, hey, it's cool. Laura Trump could be really helpful, and we're used to working with the president's family, and so it's fine.
I hear both from RNC members. I think there are people who, like, you know what? If that's what President Trump wants to do, that's fine by me. I they don't seem to care. And there are other people who think, well, does she have the experience to perform at that level? And I think that's where Laura Trump has just got to show folks what she can do, that she's going to work really hard. And like I say, my advice to her would be focus on fundraising. You know, there's just about no wealthy person in the country that won't take your phone call. Pick up the phone, go call them, go see them. We got $250 million to raise. You know, that's the best thing you can do to help us win the White House back. But also keep in mind, it's not just the White House, it's the Senate, the House, and the state, and local races as well.
The outgoing administration, I feel like if anybody has a right to be really pissed off about this, it's Drew McKissick, loyal Trump soldier, effective chairman of the South Carolina Party, by all accounts hasn't done anything wrong, but you know, the chairman's going to become a man, no longer be a woman. He had to go, even if it wasn't Laura Trump. But let me ask you, what did Ronna McDaniel do that was so wrong or that was so incompetent that she had to be pushed out? And here are the two arguments I get, right? On the one hand, Trump loyalists and other populist Republicans blame her for a lack of fundraising, for a ground game that, you know, at least under Reince Priebus was pretty darn good, a data analytics program that was pretty darn good, that's gone awry. And so it's all her fault. She's got to go. Then I talked to other people who have basically told me, and these are people in the Republican circles that say, yeah, maybe she wasn't always perfect, but she did pretty good. And the truth is, when you can't fire the coach, in this case, the coach being former President Donald Trump, you fire the team. And so she had to go for that reason, and that any issues they're having with fundraising or how they manage their ground game are not going to change for better or worse, as long as the same regime is really in charge. And that same regime is really Trump, since, as you and I have established, and we both know, but people may not realize, the RNC doesn't recruit candidates, it doesn't set messaging, it doesn't set the legislative agenda. It takes what it's given and works with it. Obviously, some chairmen have been better than others. You've known some really good chairmen in your life. So have I. We've seen others not so effective. So, I mean, is Ronna getting what she deserves here, or is she just getting the short end of the stick because people needed a scapegoat?
Well, I think people have seen in the Trump White House when he was president that, you know, people come and go and there are changes that happen. And, you know, I'm sure some of them good reasons and some of them maybe not as good a reason. You know, ultimately, the RNC's job is to win elections. And we won the White House in 16. Then in 18, we lost the House. And then in 20, we lost the White House and we lost the Senate. In 22, I will say we underperformed expectations anyway. And Ronna was a chair during that time. And does she have to answer for that? Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of it. Is that fair? No, probably not. The reality is, in my view, the reason that we had trouble in 18 and 20, 22 had a lot more to do with Donald Trump than with Ronna McDaniel. That said, Donald Trump is going to, the voters are deciding, overwhelmingly Republican primary voters, that they want Donald Trump to be the nominee. They want him to get back to the White House. And so from an RNC perspective, that means Donald Trump and his team get to have a great influence on the RNC. And so it's their decision. And the RNC members are going to go along with that. And so this Friday, we will elect Donald Trump's pick, Michael Whiteley, to be the chair. And we'll elect Laura Trump to be the co-chair. Will there be a handful full of people that maybe vote no, maybe, but I promise it'll be a handful. So they're going to win. Ronna's in the big leagues, and that's just kind of how it rolls. And same for Drew McKissick. But I will say, to Ronna's credit and to Drew McKissick's credit, is, you know, they both intend to continue working hard to help make sure that 2024 cycle is successful, that we win the White House, the Senate, and hold the House and do well at state and local races. And I would say, I mean, we've got a great opportunity in this political environment, including this Harvard-Harris poll. I'm kind of shifting on you, but there are a couple of points that I want to make. Is there are a lot of traditionally Democrat voters that are not happy with Joe Biden, and who, when asked in the poll, what did you think of the job that Donald Trump did when he was president? 64% of 18 to 25-year-olds said they thought Donald Trump did a good job. So that means Trump has got a real opportunity with younger voters who over the last couple cycles have been heavy Democrat. 40% of African Americans said Donald Trump did a good job when he was president. Huge opportunity for Donald Trump. He got, I think, 8% of the black vote in 08 and maybe 12% in 20. In 16, I said 08. But 57% of Hispanics, 43% of Asians. So Donald Trump's got a big opportunity. He's got to go out and reach out to these people. Again, it's the politics of addition. We need more voters. We need more to increase our factions of and coalition of voters.
Well, we'll see if Donald Trump is listening. I want to close this conversation by getting back to where we started. And that is, I've never seen you this outspoken. I guess I've probably known you and covered you vis-a-vis your work at the RNC for at least the past 15 years. You usually, you know, walk softly and wield a big proposal, let's say. You're quiet. You're not too out front. What's changed for you? And also, there's been talk that getting rid of Ronna McDaniel isn't enough. They'd like to see a purge of all the 168, meaning the voting members of the RNC who aren't Trump loyalists. This is coming not necessarily from Trump at the moment, but from people who support him. Why so outspoken now? And are you worried about a broader purge? These are elected positions. In each state, activists involved in the Republican Party through county parties and central committees and things of that nature go and vote for their RNC committee man and committee woman and party chairman in many cases. Why now for you, and also concern about a broader purge?
Yeah, so the RNC's mission over the last 168 years has been winning elections. And if we don't win elections, we can't affect public policy. And I just felt like we weren't living by the rules. We weren't being neutral in the primary, and we weren't focused on our core mission, which is winning elections. And so I just felt like we can't just sit here silently. And I know the Trump campaign might not be happy with some of the things that we're saying, but they need to be said. And so I took that political risk and stood up with some of my RNC friends and comrades. And so we have brought forth these resolutions because we felt like, even though we knew that they would never pass before the full RNC, that this really needs to be a discussion about what's the RNC's job and how are we going about this? And so I felt it was important. And then your second question, you know, are there people trying to replace RNC members? There are always people trying to replace RNC members. The average state party chairman's tenure on the RNC is 18 months. And it's been that way going, you know, the 20 years I've been on the committee. I have been on the committee a long time, 19 years. And some would say, well, that's 19 years too long. And, you know, certainly what I'm doing and, you know, and talking about and challenging other RNC members and even to some extent the Trump campaign may put a target on me and make it harder for me to get reelected to the RNC. And that's fine. I feel like if you get elected to be a leader, you ought to lead. And I think you ought to be able to stand up for your principles. And if you you're not going to do that, what's the point?
Henry Barber is the RNC committee man from Mississippi. Henry, thanks again so much for joining us on the Dispatch Podcast.
Thanks, David.